Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you'll learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, Mike Zlotnik. Today's episode is going to be a monologue. Prepared a little bit of an interesting content, and it's not a very exciting content, but it's certainly very, very relevant content. So what I'm going to do today is talk a little bit about how to invest in a down market. So why are we starting this conversation? Well, it is because the economy, I believe, is in a technical recession at this point. Jim Cramer from CNBC agrees with me. Well, I mean, this is a joke. We happen to be drinking from the same vodka fountain. We have very similar thoughts on the interest rates and on the economy. He's a celebrity, well-known guy, and let's just call it nobody, Big Mike. But he was on CNBC today, and he was talking a little bit about the fact that it is most likely that the economy has hit a technical recession from some point in October. I happen to believe him. I was talking about this in September, that we are essentially going into the recession. The chances of a recession pretty significant. Also, I was predicting the yield curve was going to invert most likely within 6 months. And it's looking very much like it's going to happen. We're recording this podcast in early December, and the yield curve is very, very flat at this point. It's probably going to invert in December. After a Fed rate hike. The Fed has indicated that they're going to slow down interest rate increases, which is a good news for the economy. I happen to agree with that. It is driven by the fact that there are a lot of concerns. Fed is looking at the data. There's still full employment, and there's still possibility of inflation, and that's why they haven't reversed. They haven't gone neutral yet. So more rates are coming. More rate hikes are coming, but they're not coming as fast. That's sort of the good news. So the economy is very sensitive to the interest rate, or more importantly, velocity of interest rate increases. So this move from Fed is going to certainly calm some fears. And there's another concern that the economy has been impacted by is a trade wars. So the recent G20 meeting has alleviated some of those fears. So there's a little bit of time has been bought, and negotiations with China will continue. But the primary issue with that is the fact that it's uncertainty. So uncertainty in the market is the big problem. Corporations don't know what to invest in. They don't know which way it's going to go. They don't know whether they're going to be tariffs or how much they're going to be, what area is going to be improved and what areas are going to get flat. My position on the whole conversation with the negotiations with China is that China is not going to come up to serious compromises. They'll do it, they'll make some symbolic gestures. There will be some political wins for Trump to brag about it, but that's all it's going to be. Realistically speaking, China will continue to steal intellectual property, and they may or may not acknowledge it, but they're not going to do anything about it. And they can't really. They're just not going to hurt their own corporation. As far as trade disbalance, they may commit to buy some more American goods. It's going to be minor changes. But my hope is that they'll come to an agreement sooner rather than later. The uncertainty is what hurts the markets. Also look at what's going on in Paris and France. But certainly, instability and concerns and the way they've run their own economies with low productivity, high pay, high entitlements is not a solution for long-term economic growth. When the economy is not doing well, there's going to be unrest, there's going to be all kinds of issues. So generally speaking, pure capitalism is a whole lot better than a mix of capitalist, socialistic type of structures. Now, I mean this in a very moderate manner. There's certainly great systems and structures within U.S. economy that protect the poor, provide some kind of defense mechanisms when people lose their job. I am all for the help to the folks that need it. But in general, when we spend too much money and the government gets too big and there are too many entitlements, the economy suffers. One of the primary issues is that with growth in national debt and unfunded liabilities, it is the concern that the debt to GDP ratio will continue to get worse and worse and worse. In any case, that's a long-term issue. In the short run, we're facing a level of economic slowdown. So what does it mean? It's not a big deal. It's not the end of the world. This is not a collapse of 2008 when the floor fell out, stock market crashed, banks were falling apart. We're not in that situation. We are likely entering a mild recession that's going to slow down rapid growth that has been going on for 10 years. So from that perspective, there's nothing to be fearful about. But there will be some level of correction, and we're already seeing that. So one of the simplest and most obvious corrections we've seen is a correction associated with interest rate increases. Interest rate increases have gone up 200 basis points approximately since the near zero rates to where they are now. And that change has increased costs for corporations, interest payments. They've increased mortgage payments. They've increased other sort of debt service on the borrowed money. And the U.S. economy has been built on a lot of borrowing, a lot of debt at the very low interest rates. And that period seems to be over at this point. And the consequence of this is that there's a lot of pain associated with high interest rates. The most simplest sector is real estate. Real estate slowing down, builders' stocks are coming down, especially those that are building kind of nicer homes. Affordability is the key word in today's environment. So the economy has been slowing down in the areas where affordability is low and is doing well. The real estate is doing well in the areas where the properties are still very affordable. And what's interesting is the fact that the interest rates have gone up, they've pushed affordability down for many folks. So what has happened, they moved to a more affordable properties. So the demand for affordable housing is higher, in fact, now than it was in the past because of the shift in the affordability down. So properties, let's just call them first-time home buyers, entry-level, a little bit higher, are in pretty good demand, while the nicer homes that are less affordable, that require bigger paycheck, are getting beaten up somewhat. So let me go back to the starting purpose of this whole discussion. How do you invest in a down market? That's the main question. A couple of ways to look at it, but let me start. Let me start with point number one. Point number one is focus on cash flow. Whatever you invest in, think about it, what kind of cash on cash return is it generating? Assume that there's going to be negative appreciation. Assume things will get a little bit worse. So what does it mean? What you have is cash. Cash is the king. And one of the best ways to look at every investment is do a stress test. One of the simplest way to do a stress test on an investment is assume whatever you're investing in, its revenue is going to go down by 10% and the expenses will go up by 10%. How can this happen? Well, if the economy is bad, or it's getting worse, there's lower demand, then it's a lower demand, the revenues will go down. So if it's an apartment complex, assume the numbers will go down, and then the expenses will go up. For trade wars, commodity prices will cost more because of the tariffs and so forth, and assume that just the cost of keeping the property will go up while the revenues will go down. Can it still generate positive cash flow, and to what extent? So the stress test is really important. Number two, focus on projects that have significant value add. So what does that mean? If it's real estate, it's fairly simple. The property is distressed, and there's a lot of renovation, improvements of the asset itself, and rent increases. And that will create forced appreciation. And forced appreciation doesn't depend on what the market does. It increases the value regardless of outside factors. And assume, again, as I mentioned, negative appreciation or zero in a best case scenario. So you're prepared for a downturn. And the simple number to use is 10%. There's an extreme stress test of 20%. You're welcome to use it, but at least do the 10% stress test and assume things will get worse by 10%. Now, if you can compare stock market, bond market versus alternative investments. In a downward market or where there is some level of a technical recession, corporate earnings will slow down. The chances are stock market after 10 great years of a bull run will not do phenomenally. Now, I don't have a crystal ball, or my crystal ball broke a long time ago, as I mentioned in the past. The stock market may still do fine. It may have some level of recession and it'll continue its run up. Who knows? But the point is, it has very little predictability. Predictability of stock market is very small. And the bonds, I don't like the bonds. As interest rates rise, the bonds typically fall in price. So the interest rate may continue to rise with Fed still doing its thing. So I would stay out of bonds or be at least very careful making investments into bonds. Let me continue. So alternative investments. So alternative investment assets. Typically, real estate is one of them. There are other alternative investments, but we're going to focus on real estate. It is my area of expertise, my area of passion, and I believe it presents much better opportunity than traditional vehicles like stock markets and bonds. And the key benefit of real estate is predictability. So the cash flow is very predictable in today's environment. And you could do a stress test on a cash flow and prepare yourself for what could happen if the economy gets a little bit worse. But you have a predictable investment that's likely going to generate you the returns that it's projecting with some degree of margin and some degree of assumption that it'll get a little bit worse. The other thing that I mentioned is affordability. So look at the affordability of each investment. What I like today are investments in affordable sectors. So what is affordable? Affordable housing, entry-level housing is great. These type of projects continue to do very well. Multifamily projects that are focused on affordable rent, they provide something in a given area that's average or a little bit below average. That stuff is generally pretty affordable. The high-end projects is where the risk is. So people can shift down, but they can't shift up. So if they lose a job, they can downsize to a smaller apartment with better affordability. What they can do is move to a bigger apartment. I mean, they can, they're doing great. But the point is the affordable part of the economy does a whole lot better when there's a recession. Also, I like to look at projects with dual exit strategies. So if there's an investment that you're making and the project can be improved, value add phase of the project completes, and then there is refinancing that takes place and the return of capital is brought to back to the investors while the property is kept for long term. That's a great one exit strategy, the refinancing after stabilization phase. The alternative to that is a sale. So projects with dual exit strategies always outperform the projects, or not always, but often outperform the projects that have single exit strategy, only sale. That's why affordable stuff, the cash flowing stuff, you can refinance and keep in case you can't sell, is a great way to invest. The other thing to consider is avoid projects in the areas with economies that depend on trade, depend on very specific oil and gas type of prices. The reason for this is when there's a global recession, we're already beginning to see oil prices dropping. So the towns and cities that depend on oil price for the economy are suffering already. And it's a big deal. So investing in those towns is risky today as oil price can drop further. So in the recessionary environment, I would avoid these type of investments. They may be great opportunities when the economy is recovering and the oil price is likely to go up. The same thing on the trade side. Cities and towns, we could see something happens on the
trade wars and the consequences, the layoffs in a given city. If there's too much economy depends on trade being favorable, you could lose your shirt in these type of towns. So avoid sensitive to the trade, imports, export type of towns. We also be very careful with heavily promoted deals, especially syndicated deals. Why do I say this? Because I've seen a lot of them. And many of these deals are just not great deals. They have the wrong assumptions that the numbers in the future will be like they are now. Not only that, there's a lot of fees to the sponsor. So just be very careful. In a downward economy, these type of projects can lose your shirt. In a growing economy, sort of the rising tide will rise all boats, and these projects will do well regardless of the fact that they are not great projects, just because everything is going up. It is really important to do proper underwriting, make sure underwriting is very conservative, and the good conservative sponsors today in the downwards market, they assume that the cap rates are going to be higher, basically going to get worse. Price is going to fall to a certain extent. As I mentioned, 10% stress test is pretty important. Look at the cash flow for the years 1 through 5. So any projects you invest into, look at the cash flow. Cash is the king. The cash flow is low for year 1 and 2, it's fine. But what is it going to be after the stabilization phase of the project? Is it good? Is it acceptable? So it's really important to look at those numbers. Also, look at the diversified funds. The reason I mention this, I'm a fund manager. I manage a fund. This is not a solicitation. We have a very diversified portfolio. And I can tell you, when you have a good diversified portfolio, some things may do well, some things may do so-so. But the fact that it's a diversified portfolio, that's what protects you against the downside. So diversification is even more important in a downside market than in the upside market. Again, look at the funds with a diversified portfolio, strong cash flow, income focus, not just growth, because growth in a recessionary environment is not going to be great. So focus on income, focus on predictable cash flow, focus on value add. The forced appreciation for value add project creates a downside protection, sort of a safety element to the investment. Look at the defensive sectors. So what the hell is defensive sectors? I'm not talking about military. I'm talking about affordable housing, as I mentioned. It's either single families, portfolios of those, or multifamily. Look at the self-storage. Self-storage is generally a very defensive sector. People downsize, they got to store their stuff somewhere while they're moving. And when the economy is doing bad, demand for self-storage generally increases. Service-oriented retail. Why service-oriented retail? Because Amazon effect. Today, Amazon continues to grow, continues to do very well. But local economies are still local. There's still people that provide services. If you want to get a haircut, try to buy it from the Amazon. The point is medical services, healthcare, gyms, service-oriented haircut, nail salons, restaurants, and so on and so forth. They, generally speaking, do reasonably well in any market. And obviously, if you're looking at restaurants, make sure these are kind of lower-end restaurants. The high-end restaurants don't do very well in a downside market. So service-oriented shopping centers, malls are generally fine if you can acquire them at a good price. Invest in what you understand. It's really, really important. The other day, I got a request from a good friend who wanted to talk to me about a great investment in an oil improving technology that can take old wells, inject them with some new technology, and improve pumping for the next X number of years. Well, I told him, listen, I don't understand this. The whole sector is going down because oil price has been falling, and I don't understand this. I'm never going to invest in this. So that's really, really important to invest in what you understand and invest with people who you know, like, and trust. Really, really important. Don't invest with strangers. You certainly can, but at least establish a level of confidence that they are good people with high integrity. They're not going to rip you off, and then they know what they're doing, and they're going to deal with the issues honestly and communicate well. And these things are very important to let you sleep well at night. So understand what you invest, and then invest with people who you know, like, and trust. In a recession, it's also important to increase cash. So increase your cash reserves. Whatever cash you're keeping on sidelines, have a little more. Sell speculative things and keep a little bit more in cash, or have access to cash. So access to cash could be you have a life insurance policy that will allow you to borrow from it if you need it in the future. So access to cash could be very, very important to take advantage of the opportunities that will come along in a recession market. The next idea is to invest with partners. If you're a lone wolf, well, get a little friendly with other lone wolves that you know, like, you trust. So investing with partners is pretty important. Why? Because it diversifies risks. It gives you the potential to bring in people with experience in a given investment type, people with additional capital, people with additional connections, people with additional credit. So having partners is often easier to be successful with. So finding good partners, investing with good partners is very, very important. So instead of jumping into opportunity yourself, bring in partners is a strength in numbers. Let me put it this way. Look for distress. As the economy slows down, there will be more distressed properties. There will be distressed borrowers or distressed owners, and there will be more distressed properties. You got to look at both. So what does that mean? Well, it means that there are areas that are going to get hit worse than other areas. In these areas, distress may be higher. There might be individual distress. Somebody passes on. There's a divorce and a situation unrelated to the economy itself. That's real estate 101. This type of distress happens every day, and you just need to be aware and look for the opportunities because of the personal distress. Now there are distressed properties in distressed areas. So there are cities and towns that, for example, have had some natural disaster. Now, let's take an example, hurricane. Hurricanes come through, and then they leave a lot of damage. And as this cleanup, there's a lot of payments from the insurance companies to the owners. And the owners take the money, and sometimes they want to run. Why they want to run? They don't want to deal with rehab issues. They already owned the property for a while. It's been hit by hurricane. They collect a pretty significant payment, and they just want to sell and move. And that's a significant opportunity. Same could be true for other natural disasters. So all these things that we talked about are not necessarily just for the bad economy, but they certainly are amplified by recession and economy getting worse. So just preparing yourself, thinking a little bit about how to invest in downward market might help you be successful, make better returns, and ultimately help the economy, help to revive the economy from a distress. It may not be in a big distress, but there will be recession. There will be some correction. There will be more opportunities. Just be prepared, be smart, and do good. That's it. This is a short episode. I appreciate the time. Once again, this is Big Mike, and you could find me at bigmikefund.com. And if you misspell it and you type bigmikefund.com, you'll wind up in the same place. Thank you for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to bigmikefund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.